A warning. Today is grosser than usual.
Yes. We know you're tuning into a true crime podcast listing the worst crimes we can find. We know you expect us to regale you with the creepy, the morbid, and the unsettling.
Some of you weirdos might be saying, oh, come on, just tell me the details already. Well, today's episode is the top 10 creepy cannibals.
And as much as we all love food, today we're talking about the food pics you never want to see on Instagram.
I mean, like we said, today is grosser than usual. So some of today's crimes might be too disgusting, especially for any younger listeners out there.
And if that's the case, we won't blame you for bailing. But for those of you still with us, time for a stomach-churning countdown.
Hey all you weirdos, welcome to Crime Countdown, a Spotify original from Parcast. I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena. Every week we'll highlight 10 fascinating stories of history's most engaging and unsettling crimes, all picked by the Parcast Research Gods.
This episode, we're counting down the top 10 creepy cannibals.
There's just something about cannibals that, and I think it's cannibals horrify us, but They fascinate us too. Probably because we just can't fathom the thought of switching places with the meal on our plate.
That was like really poetic.
Thank you.
Look at her, even while talking about like the grossest thing on the planet, you paint with words. Elena Urquhart, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think it helps also that I've seen and like held with my hands every piece of the human body at one point or another.
Gross.
Yeah. And it's pretty awesome, though. So to me, cannibalism is obviously disgusting, but the human body itself is just endlessly fascinating.
I can't really say that I've done the same thing as you, like
no,
holding everything in my hands, and I'm not into blood and guts or anything like that. So my stomach's already turning.
Yeah, it sure is. I have a stomach of steel, you know that.
You certainly do. And hopefully everybody listening at home does too.
Yeah.
Because this countdown is going to get gnarly. Elena has 5 creepy cannibals, and so do I, but neither of us knows who has the worst dinner guest.
Ooh, let's start the countdown.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement. Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
10.
I'll start us off with number 10, Leonarda Cianciulli. By the 1930s, Leonarda was married, living in an Italian town, and running a small shop. She was well-liked, but she was also a very superstitious woman, and that led her down a dangerous and disgusting path.
Oh, we love a disgusting path.
And it starts with a fortune teller, which we also love.
Spooky, spooky.
So she was warned by a fortune teller that her children were in danger.
Ugh.
And she became convinced that the only way to protect them was through human sacrifice.
That's a leap.
It's a very big leap.
It's a huge leap.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a faith.
No.
It's a leap of nasty.
Of nasty.
Between 1939 in 1940, Leonardo lured 3 middle-aged women into her little shop. She drugged them, killed them with an axe, of all things.
Wow.
And then disposed of their bodies by boiling them in caustic soda.
Wow.
Like, she was dedicated in the most horrific manner.
What a moment.
Yeah, it's nasty, and it gets worse, because she turned what became of at least one of the victim's bodies into soap.
Ooh.
Soap. And she later said, quote, I gave bars to neighbors and acquaintances.
Because who doesn't love a nice soap?
Like, you're not being a friendly neighbor, ma'am.
A nice decorative soap.
Ugh. She also made tea cakes with her victim's blood, which she served to people. And she also admitted to eating them herself.
Yikes.
Bloody tea cakes. Not just raspberry, let me tell you. And a suspicious relative of one of the victims drew attention to Leonarda's shop, and Leonarda immediately confessed. And then she died after spending just 30 years in prison.
I love that they're like, hey, are you eating people and also baking them into things and soaps and giving them to people? And she was like, ah, Yeah.
It's
yeah,
me.
I sure am.
And then just like died in prison.
And then peace.
Nobody turned her into soap though, at least.
Nine.
At number nine is Austin Harriff. In August 2016, at just 19 years old, Harriff murdered two people in the garage of their Florida home. When authorities arrived, Harriff was gnawing on one of his victims' faces.
See, we already went to a very dark place.
Sure
just
did.
Two into the countdown.
But you know what? There's further to go.
She's gonna barf. And by she, I mean me.
We'll never hit the bottom. Austin Harriff is believed to have been in the midst of a schizophrenic episode when he carried out the attack.
Oh, that's
and
sad, though.
I know, right? That summer, he had started to experience grandiosity and a sense of self-importance, plus hallucinations of demonic things.
That'll all do it.
That's a cry for help.
Yeah.
He had no drugs aside from THC in his system. He did have a long history of drug use, including Adderall, mushrooms, and cocaine, though.
Okay, so again, so that'll do it.
There's some things working against each other here.
Right.
Harriff also attacked the couple's neighbor when he tried to intervene and help the couple that night.
Are you serious?
Can you imagine trying to intervene and help them?
And then getting away and knowing what would have happened had you not gotten away?
Like, what a neighbor. I'm looking around my house, I'm like, would any of my neighbors intervene on that? Or would they just be like, it was really nice that you kept your lawn neat?
No, I think some of your neighbors would totally intervene.
Like, geez,
this
Louise.
Is a beautiful neighborhood.
It is, but that's a great neighbor. As authorities escorted him to the hospital, he said he'd, quote, eaten something bad.
Shut up.
Yep. Then explained that he meant humans.
Oh my God. So he didn't mean like I ate something that made my stomach hurt. He meant something that I should never have eaten.
Something I probably shouldn't have
all my life.
Yeah. And that it wasn't good.
No.
And it's not treating me good.
Oh no.
Can you imagine the hospital staff? They were like, oh, okay.
No.
Not like just bad, like ground beef. He was then declared legally insane at the time of the attack. So
this is sad all around.
I was going to say, this is just a sad one.
Yeah.
Eight.
Number eight on our countdown of top 10 creepy cannibals is Issei Sagawa. In 1981, Sagawa killed a woman in Paris and spent the next 2 days eating parts of her body. As if it couldn't get worse, this monster escaped justice for his crime and actually profited from it. This one blows my mind.
This one infuriates me.
It's horrific. Mm-hmm. So in 1981, Sagawa was going to school in Paris and he invited a Dutch student to his flat. And I think it was under the guise of studying together.
Probably, yeah.
And that's where he shot her and ate part of her body.
What the hell?
Yeah. So he was caught trying to dispose of the body in a nearby pond. Before he could be tried, though, a court found him mentally unfit to stand trial, and he was committed to an asylum instead.
Okay.
Which is great. But then his wealthy parents petitioned the authorities in Paris to release their son, and they did, and he was sent back to Japan.
Can you imagine being that bad of a parent?
No.
That you're like, my child literally murdered and ate someone, and you're like, let him out.
Let him out.
Come on.
It's like, what?
Like, no.
He needs to pay for that.
Being
you know?
A parent is being like, you did something wrong, son.
Or like, you need to get some help at least.
Consequences.
So they actually made a movie about him, which audiences walked out of at the Venice Film Festival in 2017.
You know, that's either a really bad movie or a really great movie if they walked out.
That's true. I'm yeah. willing to bet really bad.
Yeah, I'm leaning more towards that.
Really graphic. Some good news. He's gone from having some relative fame for a disgusting act to living in relative obscurity and failing health.
Good.
On the up and up for us, on the down and down for him.
Good.
Seven.
At number seven this week is Andre Thomas. In 2004, Thomas killed his estranged wife, their son, and her young daughter before removing their hearts from their bodies.
Oh my God.
Once you hear his excuse, you'll think, oh, he's crazy. But keep an eye on how he takes the insanity to absolutely new levels.
I'm scared.
Yeah, get ready. So Andre confessed to the crimes, and he said he believed that his son was the Antichrist and his wife was a related evil spirit of some sort. So, of course, you're like, oh, okay.
He sounds like Lori Vallow.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, there it is. After he was arrested, Andre gouged out his right eye because he read a Bible verse, Matthew 18:9, about plucking out one's eye.
Was it supposed to do something good?
So far, everything's fine.
Yikes.
Right, everything's fine.
I don't like eye things.
Smooth sailing for this
head.
And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away.
Shut up.
Yeah. So it's better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into the hellfire.
What?
So, you know, if you got some sin, just pluck out that eye real quick.
What if
you're good.
What if it wasn't my eye that caused me to sin?
And make sure, don't just pluck it out, throw it away.
Oh, ouchie.
Throw it away. The trial became a back and forth of whether he committed murders while in a drug and alcohol induced psychotic state, or if he was just legally insane. So they're like, which one is it?
I don't know. You would hope that he was legally insane.
There's no way you were sober and sane during this. You had to be one or the other.
You plucked your eye out, sir.
Well, he was convicted and sentenced to death in his original trial in 2005. After being convicted, he wasn't done. He gouged out his other eye and he ate it.
I'm closing my eyes right now, and
I know.
The countdown is done. Good night.
I know. I'm like rubbing my eyes right now. I'm like, you're in there, right?
Oh,
you're okay.
God.
Stay in there, guys.
I feel like he must have been like.
Something's up with
that. Yeah, he was going through it.
Six.
Also on our list at number six is an Australian cannibal with a history of violence, Catherine Knight.
There she is.
In February 2000, the then 44-year-old mother of four stabbed her boyfriend, John Price, 37 times and planned to feed his body to her children.
This case, bananas.
Insane.
Bananas.
We've never done another case like that. Like,
no, we covered this on Morbid and... Wow.
So Catherine had quite a track record with her relationships.
Sure did.
She had knocked her ex-husband unconscious with a frying pan, burned her boyfriend's face with an iron, and then stabbed him in the stomach with scissors.
After that first one, I was like, she's a cartoon character.
Yeah.
And the other two come and you're like, oh no.
Exactly.
No, it's not.
Well, then she met John Price in 1994 and everything changed for the better, of course, Elena.
Yeah, everything was fine after that.
Except not at all.
No.
So they moved in together the following year and their relationship really quickly turned violent. So violent, in fact, that John got a restraining order at one point.
I would too.
Yeah, well, it didn't work, unfortunately. His co-workers called police when he didn't show up to work. And when police arrived, they found Catherine comatose on the kitchen floor. And there was like a lot of food still warm or cooking, including, you know, potatoes and pumpkin pie and parts of John Price.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Never had that before.
Me either. Never planned to.
Don't want it.
She also had set the dinner table with the children's names on their place cards.
That part is so stomach churning.
It's like
the idea that she was like, here, kids,
you're sitting here and you'll have the arm and you're sitting here and you have the ankle. Like, that's so sad. Wow. I think his kids were there, too.
I think so.
Well, thankfully, authorities got there before the kids did.
Ooh.
And double thankfully, Catherine Knight became the first woman in Australia to get life without parole in 2001.
Stay in jail, Nana.
Bye, Nana.
Wow. I'm glad to see Catherine Knight on the list.
She had to be on here.
She had to be.
I'm looking out for a couple more, but I know they're going to be toward the bottom.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple that are like, they got to be.
Yeah.
But you know they're going to be like really high on the list.
Definitely.
I'm just saying. I'm excited. I hope everybody's hungry.
Ew.
Hi, it's Kate from Parcast Network. If you haven't had a chance to check out the entertaining new podcast, Blind Dating, now's the time to binge what you've missed before catching all new episodes every Wednesday. In this Spotify original from Parcast, we're expanding the places you can meet your match with a twist you'll never see coming. Join host Tara Michelle as she introduces one hopeful single to two strangers in a voice-only call. Through a series of illuminating games and questions, the trio will get to know one another without the distraction of appearances. But once the cameras are turned on, is personality still enough for these strangers to fall for each other? Or will they say farewell? Connect with new episodes of Blind Dating every Wednesday. You can find and follow Blind Dating free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
5.
All right, let's jump back in with number 5 on our countdown of creepy cannibals.
Starting off the second half of our list is Gary Heidnik, whose sick perversions are what partly inspired the character Buffalo Bill in the movie The Silence of the Lambs.
Shut up.
One of my favorite movies of all
time.
Between 1986 and 1987, Heidnik kidnapped 6 women, held them captive in the basement of his Philadelphia area home, and tortured them daily, eventually forcing cannibalism on some of his victims.
Now that did not happen in Silence of the Lambs.
No, not that we saw.
Woof.
Yeah. He was called the House of Horrors killer, and I think we can see why.
Yes.
Because he kept the starved women chained in a pit in the basement of his home.
Oh my God.
I can't believe more people don't know about this guy. Like, this is not one of those, I feel like Gary Heidnik is not like on
super
the top.
Super well known.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Survivors said he subjected them to electric shock and stabbed them in their ears with a screwdriver.
Mm-hmm.
Ah! That makes my ears hurt.
I think they also had to like sit in like water a lot. That's yeah. why he would electrocute them.
Oh, that's so messed up. 2 of his victims died, and he dismembered one and forced the survivors to eat her remains. Not just that, but he mixed them with dog food.
That is just another level of pure evil.
That you just wonder, like, did he sit down and be like, what is literally the worst thing I can do?
I don't understand.
Yeah. One of his victims escaped and flagged down a police officer, which... what a woman.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. When authorities arrived, he opened the door and came out and wouldn't let them in. So he just came out and was like, no, nothing to see in here.
It's like, officers. If you're not letting me in, yeah. I feel like there's probably a lot to
He's
see
like,
in
hey,
here.
What's going on? What's happening? But police picked up on the stench from one of the victims that died and they busted him right then and there.
Perfect.
Because you can't hide decomp.
For that long.
Heidnik tried to claim insanity during the trial, which was honestly like a good bet at that point.
Seriously.
But the judge wasn't convinced. Heidnik was sentenced to death because he was just evil.
Right.
He was executed by lethal injection in July 1999, and he was the last person to be executed in Pennsylvania.
Wow, they ended on a big note.
What an honor.
4.
Landing at number 4 this week is Armin Mivis. In 2001, Mivis put out an odd and very specific personal ad. He was looking for somebody who was, quote, well-built and who would agree to being eaten. And someone replied.
There is someone for everyone.
This is...
there is.
Your peach is out there.
Never give up.
I don't know why I said peach. That's gross. Cannibals.
Hashtag cannibals. You got food on the brain.
Ew. So a man named Bernd Brandis arrived at Mivis's home in a small German town after responding to his ad. He drugged himself with sleeping pills and schnapps before Mivis removed a piece of his body, which they both ate together. It's like a real bonding experience,
what
I would think.
What an experience.
Brandis then took a bath while Mivis read a Star Trek novel.
Wow, the details there really paint a picture.
You take a bath. I'm going to go catch up on some light reading that I've been doing. Have you heard of Star Trek?
You know, A Galaxy Beyond?
I mean, at least there's consent here. I guess that's the only thing I can say.
Yeah, I mean, everybody seems chill about it.
I also want to know who printed the personal ad.
I really want to know how that got past an editor.
Yeah, same. Well, anyways, German prosecutors described how Mivis had fantasized about killing and then devouring someone, including his classmates, since he was 8 years old.
I'm sorry, if your 8-year-old is like, mother,
I'd like to eat someone.
I've been thinking, and it would be nice to eat another human being.
You should call someone.
Yeah, take it back.
Well, the unprecedented case was difficult for German lawyers since cannibalism is not illegal in Germany.
How'd that happen?
I don't know. I feel like after this, maybe they wrote that down like,
yeah, like did
on
someone,
the to-do list.
Did someone forget? They
to
were
do.
Like, oh, we always meant to put that on the books.
Next up, make cannibalism illegal.
Or were they just like, is this common sense that maybe you just shouldn't eat another human being?
Or maybe they were like, well, he said he wanted to be eaten.
Yeah.
I don't know. The main evidence for defense was a videotape made by Mivis in which Brandis gives his consent.
Oh, this is really creepy.
It really is.
I don't like it.
This seems fake, but it's not.
It gives me like gross feelings.
I know. So Mivis said he had felt lonely as a child and had fantasized about having a young blonde brother who he could consume and keep forever, a la Jeffrey Dahmer.
Wow.
Maybe it's like a psychological thing.
That is, yeah, because that was Jeffrey Dahmer's thing. I want to keep you forever.
He was lonely.
And there's a piece of you with me.
Not to be gross here, but they're not going to be with you forever.
No, they're going to vacate eventually.
Everything does.
That's just biology. Number three on our countdown of creepy cannibals is the werewolf of Bedburg, Peter Stump. Stump was executed on October 31st, 1589, on charges of murder and of being a werewolf.
The huge.
Yeah, you know. If the stories about him are true, Stump apparently confessed to eating men, women, and children, including his own son, and it was all with the help of a special belt that he wore. Stump's story may very well be the stuff of legend, like crazily
enough. Sounds like it.
The information is kind of limited about it, but most public records were destroyed in the 30 Years' War, so, you know, you don't know.
You just never know.
But it is believed that before Peter Stump had the ability to transform into a werewolf, he was already a little evil at the age of 12.
So first he was evil, and then he figured out his transformation
skills.
He didn't
need, skills. Like, the lichen ability to be evil. He was just having it. The legend goes that the devil gifted him a pelt belt.
Pelt belt.
A pelt belt, which is a belt made from the skin of an animal with the hair on it.
Yucky.
So he was like, here's this hairy belt.
Ew, that's like when your like rotisserie chicken still has a little bit of hair on it. That's really gross for this countdown, but that's what that's like.
You're a cannibal. That's gross.
I am not.
Oh, that was really gross. When Stump wore the belt, he would assume the likeness of a ravenous wolf, because that's what happens when you get a furry belt.
I almost just said, duh.
A pelt belt. And upon removing the belt, he would be human again.
Simple.
So Stump was reportedly an insatiable bloodsucker.
One of those.
He was just murdering and devouring not just humans, but he also wanted to eat up sheep and goats and lambs and cattle. He was just carnivorous all over the place.
He needs to draw a line somewhere.
I mean, it's not good for you. Like, add a little greed in there.
Right. Like, IBS is a thing, dude.
Also, are you hydrating properly, Stump? I don't know.
I don't know.
He also confessed to having intercourse with Succubus, a seductive female demon or supernatural entity. So Stump really, like, did everything.
That's just saucy of him.
He was evil at 12 already. He got a pelt belt. He became a werewolf.
Wait, you skipped met the devil.
Well, that's where he got his pelt belt.
You're right.
So I thought it was implied. And then he's also just like doing it with a succubus. It's
get
like,
it.
Calm down, Peter Stump. Well, the magistrates sent men to look for the belt, but it was never found.
You don't say.
Which I don't think means it didn't exist at all. I think it means that he has it.
In the afterlife?
He has his pelt belt.
Wow, there is a lot going on in this countdown.
I personally always love a pelt belt involved in anything.
I think pelt belt has lost all meaning for
sure,
me, and
sure
it never even had meaning.
Yeah, it lost whatever meaning it didn't have in the beginning.
I was also very happy to see Nana Catherine on here.
Oh yeah, we wanted Nana Catherine. And Mivis? What is Mivis doing?
Too much.
Too much is what he's doing.
He's doing the absolute most.
The absolute most.
He was like, turn down for what?
That's so gross.
That's messed up.
Well, I know there's two that I'm looking for, and I'm sure everybody else is. And look at that. We have two more left.
And I know who I have, and I'm assuming who you have.
Two.
We're down to the final two spots on our countdown of creepy cannibals. At number two is America's boogeyman, Albert Fish.
There he is.
Fish was a serial killer in the early 1900s who exhibited a vast number of perversions during his life, including cannibalism. He confessed and was eventually convicted in 1935 of the kidnapping slash murder of 10-year-old Grace Budd, whom Fish had eaten in a stew.
Ugh. Poor little girl.
I do have to wonder if it was fish stew.
Ooh.
As a young child, Albert Fish ended up in an orphanage where he was abused and began to enjoy the physical pain from the beatings.
Well, that's not good.
So we're really off to a great start here.
Nope.
He said, I was there till I was nearly 9, and that's where I got started wrong.
Oh, he did get started wrong.
He certainly did. So as an adult, his enjoyment of physical pain turned into self-harm. Then, after his wife of 19 years left him, he developed a taste for raw meat.
Weird that those two are connected.
Divorce and raw meat.
My wife left me. I would like to chew on a raw cow.
Or just, you know, get some sushi. But yeah. You do you, Albert. The case that is discussed most with Fish is the murder of Grace Budd, which led to his death sentence. So he kidnapped, killed, and ingested parts of her body. Oh. And not only is that horrific, he went one step further.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He sent her mother a letter confirming everything he did. I.e. serial killer letters, episode of Crime Countdown.
Go listen to it. It's great, but awful at the same time.
All of the above.
That letter truly is awful. It's horrifying.
It's so sad, too. So during the trial, his attorney cited Fish's fondness of eating human excrement as evidence of his extreme abnormality.
I love that he's like, guys, he's weird.
He eats poop.
It's real weird.
It's like, yeah, I think that goes without saying,
sir. Something's
wrong. On January 16th, 1936, the man who, by his own admission, had murdered at least a dozen children was executed at Sing Sing Prison.
Bye, Albert.
See ya never, hopefully.
One.
And that brings us to number one on our countdown of the top 10 creepy cannibals. Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yes.
One of the most notorious serial killers in the world, Dahmer was also a necrophiliac, gross, and a cannibal, nasty, who ate portions of some of his 17 male victims between 1978 and 1991. But he's not just creepy, he was also very lucky. Dahmer repeatedly lured men to his Milwaukee home, drugged them with sleeping pills, strangled them, and then just dismembered them.
Yeah.
He also put pieces of his victims in the refrigerator or freezer and would dine on those just every now and then.
Like, it's not a little thing of Talenti, Jeffrey.
No. Like, it's not like you just grab some cookie dough off the roll.
No, it hits different.
It hits very different.
Yeah.
Very different, I imagine. There were several opportunities for Dahmer to be caught, which is so frustrating.
In this case, it's like extra, extra frustrating.
Oh, you want to scream.
Hearing the tapes.
Yeah. He had a record that pointed to him becoming worse and worse, too. So if he had just been caught along the way at some point, we could have saved so many people.
Uh-huh.
I say we, like I was there. I was like, we could have saved him. No, but these people could have saved him.
They definitely could have.
The things that were happening were including he was accused of rape and assault in the army. So right there already, it's like, what's going on, Jeffrey? Mm-hmm. He was arrested for indecent exposure. And I believe this was in front of, like, minors.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, because we covered this on Morbid and wowzer. He was caught drugging patrons of a gay bathhouse and he was kicked out of there. And
you
never let back.
That alone would get you some time.
Yeah, and you'd think there that somebody would be like, maybe watch out for this guy.
Yeah.
Like, somebody needs to stop this. Well, in 1988 and 1989, he was imprisoned for drugging young boys and sexually assaulting them. And this all happened while murdering other victims.
And it's like, how do you get out of prison after drugging young boys and sexually assaulting them?
Yeah. And then you just go back to doing what you're doing.
What?
He also had a job at this point, too. And I'm like, how did you have time?
Didn't he work at a chocolate factory?
He did. So you might have eaten like a Dahmer bar.
Yeah, I think we said that on Morbid.
We did. It's a thing.
It's not the golden ticket.
Absolutely not. So in May 1991, according to Dahmer, he drilled a hole in the head of a young boy and poured in acid because he wanted to make a zombie.
That's horrific.
Yeah. He figured if he did that it would just make them like a lovesick zombie.
And he basically could keep them forever.
And then he could keep them and do whatever he wanted, but they wouldn't leave.
It's like, eventually that's going to stop working.
That's such a weird pathology. That you're like, I don't want you to leave, so I'm going to drill a hole in your head and pour acid in.
It's like, why don't you just find somebody that you love and loves you back?
Someone will love you. I mean, maybe not you, Jeffrey. No one will love you, but maybe everybody else.
Maybe they could have before this all.
Absolutely. And Jeffrey himself and his victim both encountered police.
And nothing happened. The most frustrating part.
It's awful. They literally released victims back to him because it was like basically homophobia back then that they were like, this is a gay thing. We're just going to let them deal with it. The officers involved said they believed Dahmer when he told them that the boy was his lover and he just let them be.
Because
again, they were like, we don't want to deal with it. He ended up killing the boy after. These police were temporarily fired.
Which is
like... the key word, temporarily.
How do you get temporarily fired?
Apparently it's very easy.
You got laid off for that.
Yeah, you got a vacation is what you got.
Right.
Dahmer was captured in 1991 and sentenced to 16 life terms. And he ended up being killed by a fellow inmate on November 28th, 1994.
What a bummer.
Bye, Jeffrey.
See ya. Well, what do you think? Did the research gods do a good job?
The Milwaukee Cannibal had to be number one.
Definitely. And I mean, I feel like nothing else could have been number one. And I expected to see all of these people.
Yeah, I did too.
But I have one that they missed. And I'm so excited.
You have one?
Have you heard of the Greyhound bus attack?
Oh, yes.
Vince Lee.
Was I that a cannibal?
Yeah. He killed a man named Tim McLean and started eating parts of him.
I didn't know he started eating them. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that attack is horrific.
Gruesome.
Horrific.
I don't think he got a ton of prison time. I think like people were really upset about the outcome of that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I don't remember the aftermath. I remember vividly that happening.
Mm-hmm.
It was huge.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you.
You got him.
But honestly, otherwise, this was a perfect list.
It was incredible. Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another great episode.
Remember to follow Crime Countdown on Spotify to get a brand new episode delivered every week.
You can find all episodes of Crime Countdown and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Spotify has all your favorite music and podcasts all in one place. They're making it easier to listen to whatever you want to hear for free on your phone, computer, or smart speaker.
And if you can't get enough of these creepy crimes, check out our After Crime Countdown podcast playlist on Spotify, where we've handpicked even more episodes about this week's stories that we think you'll enjoy.
And if you like this show, follow at Parcast on Facebook and Instagram and at Parcast Network on Twitter.
And if you like us, which I hope you do, we like you, you can follow our other podcast, Morbid, a true crime podcast. You can listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts, especially Spotify. And you can find us on Instagram at Morbid Podcast or on Twitter at A Morbid Podcast.
And we hope you keep it somewhat weird until next Monday.
But definitely not this weird.
Mm-mm.
Crime Countdown was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler. Sound designed by Kevin McAlpine. Produced by John Cohen, Jonathan Ratliff, Maggie Admire, and Kristen Acevedo. Crime Countdown stars Ash Kelly and Elena Urquhart.
Hi, it's Kate again. Before you go, I want to remind you to check out the hit Spotify original from Parcast, Blind Dating. Every Wednesday, find out if there's more to love than just looks. Follow Blind Dating free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.